Daniel chapter 1 is where we will be at this morning. So however you engage with Scripture, I encourage you to find Daniel chapter 1. It's a very special time of year as school is quickly coming to a close. There's probably 5-6 weeks left. People are mentally counting down. I know my girls have been counting down since Christmas break to when school will finally come to an end. But school is rapidly coming to an end. And we have one graduating senior this year that we are going to be recognizing on Sunday, May 19th. Sam Jividen is graduating from Talmadge High School, and we will be honoring and recognizing him on Sunday, May 19th. Sign-ups and all that stuff will be coming up very, very soon. But I was reminded of something that I shared 5 years ago. I had to go back and kind of look at when I shared this. But I shared some funny senior kind of yearbook quotes that I want to kind of, not yet, Benny, you jumped me too soon, bud. Thanks. And some of you may have come up with your own clever ones that you did for your own senior kind of like last statement you want to be known as for the rest of your life, I guess, if people still pay attention to yearbooks. But here are some of the ones that I found that I thought are very worth sharing. The first one is, education is important, but biceps are importanter. That's by far one of my all-time favorites. Another one that I thought was good was, that wasn't like High School Musical at all. Really, and this next one is just from a mom. This just screams mom. Put something inspirational / mom. Whoever did that, they just quoted what mom said, put something inspirational. All right, mom, I'll do it. Here are two foundational statements that need to be in high school yearbook quotes, but they're not. And if they are, I really want to know, because this young person needs a high five and a fist bump if they put something even close to something like this. It's a quote from Bob Goff. I used to think I could shape the circumstances around me, but now I know Jesus uses circumstances to shape me. Powerful statement. Just a powerful statement. Another one comes from Barbara Brown Taylor. Humans do not lose control. You and I lose the illusion that we were ever in control in the first place. Last week, we began our journey through Daniel, this spring series that we're going through, by focusing on just a simple phrase, the way of the exile. And if you need a little bit of help getting the bigger context, if you would like to dive a little bit deeper into what exile is all about, I mean, last week we just barely scratched the surface. We have posted some Bible Project videos. They are on our website. If you go to www.churchinthefalls.org and in our little search box, if you write Bible Project, all of our videos will come up. We've been posting them up there just as quick links for a number of years. But there are three videos that we have posted. Two are about exile, and one is just a big picture overview of the book of Daniel. They'll really help as we journey, as we go through. This will be really good tools, really good resources for you to pay attention to. But in regards to the way of exile, there is this underlying theme in the Bible that is always permeating in the background. At times it's really, really close. At times you can see it straight up. At times it's more abstract. It's blurred. But it's there. And this is not so exciting reality of something that the people of God experienced that had a major impact in a number of areas. The first area that exile had an impact on was their understanding of who God is. As they were going through this really difficult, at times hard to get our minds around, understanding of exile, it impacted their understanding of who God was. It impacted their understanding about themselves. We know our God to be love and our God to be good and our God to be all about truth and beauty and all of those things. But when you're going through the midst of something as hard and as life and history shaping as exile was, it really pumps the brakes on some of our presuppositions about who God is. And it did for Daniel. It did for the people of Israel. It did for Jesus and his contemporaries during the first century, as they weren't experiencing a not in their homeland exile, but they were experiencing a this is not how it should be in our homeland type of exile. I hope that makes sense. And it impacted their understanding about God, and it impacted their understanding about themselves. It impacted their understanding about consequences. About, you know what, you can't just keep on doing the same thing over and over and over again, hoping you can get away from it. Hoping you can be scot-free. You can be not guilty. You can only play the get-out-of-jail-free card so many times until life hits you where you don't want to be hit and you end up facing the consequences of decisions that you make, or, which is even more difficult, decisions of consequences based on stuff that you didn't do, but you are reaping the consequences of someone else's decision. If you've ever been in a classroom, if you can flash back to elementary or middle school or high school or wherever it may be, and the entire class got punished for something that two or three of your other classmates did. This is the same type of thing that exile involved. We don't know for sure that every single Israelite, every single person that belonged to God was guilty of the things that Chronicles and Kings highlights about why God stepped in and did what God did. But you know there were some that just faced the repercussions of decisions that others made. It impacted their understanding about forgiveness and grace. During the exile and then after the exile, when they're going back home almost 70 years later, about God's forgiveness and about God's grace. Many of us who have faced consequences, decisions that we ourselves have made or others have made, understand the journey that forgiveness and grace can take us on, and how it opens our minds and our hearts and our eyes to the beauty and power and free gift that often forgiveness and grace is. It also impacted their understanding about God's presence and about God's participation, especially in ways and in areas that they never thought God would be present, nor that God would be active in. When we look at the book of Daniel, and they are not at home anymore. They are not where they want to be. They are not who they want to be. But yet in the midst of all of that, God is present and God is active. God is not somehow abandoned his people, but he is presently participating in everything that's going on. In the midst of such difficult circumstances, in the midst of the arc of the biblical story, we can see that the first exile was from the Garden of Eden in Genesis 3. The second exile was the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11. The third was a part of the story of Abraham. And as we looked at very, very briefly, reading a lot of text last week, yes. But when you look at Deuteronomy 30, and you see the direction with which Moses is kind of foreshadowing about what will happen if God's people choose to behave and act in a certain way, yes, the consequences will come. That's the end of the chapter. But the beginning of Deuteronomy 30 has an awful lot to do with grace and God's presence and God's participation in the midst of the difficult circumstances that were and are exile. We also looked very quickly at Jeremiah 29, which is God's vision and God's mission about what he wants his people to do and be while they are going through the difficult times. Get married, have kids, Pray for those who are over you, even though you don't want them to be over you or have control over you. Pray for them. Go about doing and being good in the place where God has planted you, wherever God has planted you. And sometimes that's hard for us to hear, because we want to force the right. We want to force the ones who are above us to do what we believe is right and true and good. But Jeremiah 29 gives a different vision, gives a different mission of what the people of God were to be about. There are two massive exiles within the biblical narrative. The first one occurred in 722 B.C., so 2,700 years ago, is when the Assyrian Empire came in and took out and destroyed, for the most part, the northern kingdom of Israel. And it became something else. The second big one had this three waves that took place. In 605 BC, so 2,600 years ago, Nebuchadnezzar came in and made his presence known within the capital city of Jerusalem. He made his presence known in a very, you're not going to do everything that you want to do type of presence. I am here and I'm going to begin dictating how you go about your everydayness, how you go about your government, how you go about your religion. I'm going to begin to have a say in how things are done. And then in 586 BC, Nebuchadnezzar had enough. And he came in and he began the process of laying out the capital city of Jerusalem, especially the temple that was for Jews their identity. It was their social structure. It was their identity. It was their everything. And Nebuchadnezzar began the process of destroying it and sending more people back to Babylon until finally around 582, the three waves had come to a complete end. And that is what finds us here in the context of Daniel chapter 1. Living for God in a foreign, potentially hostile culture requires two things. Requires discernment and it requires wisdom. And one definition of wisdom, we looked at many definitions of wisdom in Sean's class this morning. And there are some good ones out there, and you may have your own good one, but one that I would like to offer you this morning. A good definition of wisdom is finding the right way to do the right thing, which requires discernment, which requires process, which requires failure, and which requires success. Learning, finding the right way to do the right thing. So with that definition of wisdom in our minds, let's go at the text. Daniel chapter 1, beginning in verse 3. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, chief of Nebuchadnezzar's court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility. So those whose their upper echelon type of hierarchical society, folks, to bring them young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. This chief official was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained, you could easily put reprogrammed, for 3 years. And after that, they were to enter the king's service. You see the why behind the process here, right? For 3 years, day in and day out, sun up, sun down, you are being reprogrammed. You are being recommissioned. You are being re-educated about who you are and about what this world is all about. Many scholars, and I tend to believe with some of them, believe this is a part of the foundation of what Genesis is all about. You're being reprogrammed for 3 years about how it started, how it went wrong, and how things are going back together. That's worldview. And Genesis answers all of those questions within the first three chapters. How it started, how it went wrong, and how's it going to get fixed. There is this process going on here where the names, these young men who we're about to be introduced to, they were being reprogrammed. And many of us see that in our day and age today. The ways in which we are constantly, day in and day out, attempting to be reprogrammed. How it started, what went wrong, and how to fix it. So, moving on. Verse 6. Among those who were chosen were some from Judah. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names, a part of their training. To Daniel, the name Belshazzar. To Hananiah, Shadrach. To Mishael, Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. And he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself that way. And now we see God stepping in. His presence and His participation. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, I am afraid of my Lord the King, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel. So Daniel transitions. He's like, if I'm not going to get anywhere with the chief official, my next line of direction, my discernment and my wisdom process of finding the right way to do the right thing is now I'm going to go to the guard. The guard that this chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Daniel said, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. I would have died. My story in this part would have been over. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. To these four young men, again, presence and participation. God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. We're going to get into that as we continue to go through the book. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them into his servants, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service, and every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. And we will get into Cyrus later on in the spring. The setting of what is taking place is the capital city of Babylon, which is known as Shinar, which traces all the way back to Genesis chapter 11 with the Tower of Babel. The ones described and mentioned in this opening scene remind us of other biblical characters. Joseph, for example, at beginning in Genesis 37. But these elite and well-educated Hebrews, they were show-off trophies to the people of Babylon. But they were also means to help continue the process to get the empire to thrive and to succeed. A part of their assimilation process was to feel more at home in their new surroundings and in their new culture. So they were offered to eat the leftover food and wine from the king's table as a continued means of lowering the shock level of not being at home anymore. They go from being the majority in Judah to very quickly becoming the minority in a pluralistic pagan culture and setting. The same can and is still going in our culture and setting today. At one point in time, followers of Jesus could be said as being the majority. But now, and continuing the direction, we find ourselves becoming more and more into the minority category. The names of our main characters here in Hebrew, they reveal so much beauty and so much intentionality from their parents. Daniel's name means God is my judge. Very beautiful, very powerful, very intentional name that Daniel's parents gave him. Hananiah means Yahweh has been gracious. Mishael means who is what God is. Azariah means Yahweh has helped. Again, very intentional means of direction from these young men's parents as to who they wanted their boys to be known as and to become, living into and living out of their names. As was the custom of the time, during this process of re-assimilation, is to give your captives new names to assist in the reprogramming process. Daniel became Belshazzar. May Bel protect his life. Bel means Lord, referring to the Babylonian god Marduk. So may Marduk protect his life. Hananiah became Shadrach, which means the command of Aku, the moon god of the Babylonian religion. Mishael became Meshach, which means who is what Aku is, who is what the moon god is. And Azariah became Abednego, which means servant of Nebu, the Babylonian god of wisdom and architecture. After 3 years of getting accustomed to new food, new names, new culture and setting, one would think that the reprogramming assimilation process would have been a success after 3 years of day in and day out going through this new process. But not so fast. At some point, Daniel resolved. At some point during this process, Daniel in his mind and in his heart said, "Okay, I will only go so far, but I am not going any farther than this. You can only take me, you can only direct me, you can only in your mind think you can reprogram me up to a certain point, but I am not going any farther than that." The beauty and power and emphasis behind the Hebrew word for resolved means established. It means there was something within Daniel that echoes back to another time in his life where he had established himself as living into and out of his name that his parents gave him. He was established. No matter what food they gave him, no matter what name they gave him, no matter what other reprogramming and reprocessing they tried to do to Daniel, there was something, there was, I don't know, this foundation. Whoever builds foundation upon the rock. There was this foundation within Daniel that was not going to be moved, no matter the rain, no matter the storm, no matter the circumstances. Daniel was established. Daniel established himself to go no further with this one area. Something he could actually attempt to change. There's so much wisdom here in Daniel's resolve. It required risk, but God was at work in Daniel's risk. The defilement mentioned was to be considered ritually unclean through the food and through the drink that was daily offered to them. Daniel said, I don't want to be defiled like this anymore. In Babylon, with Solomon's temple no longer in sight, Daniel made this decision. Now, one could argue that what Daniel is doing here, and you've probably heard this before, is Daniel is saying, I am not going to eat any of the food that isn't kosher any longer. Any of the food that's found within the Torah that I am not allowed to eat as a Hebrew. I am not going to go that direction anymore. And the food that Daniel was offered on a daily basis, including the wine, was more than likely offered to the other gods like Nebu and Aku as a way of appeasing them to get the people what they wanted. So Daniel's resolve was about, this isn't kosher, I'm not going to eat this, and this food is probably offered to other gods. I'm not going to have anything to do with it. And a third option that I learned this week that I think could be a part of Daniel's resolve is he is thinking back on the leftover people who are in Jerusalem whose world has been completely rocked. Not much food, not much wine, not much water. So Daniel's resolve is, why am I here in Babylon living it up when my cousins or when my whoever is back in Jerusalem suffering and going through such heartache and pain? Why do I get to live it up and my brothers and sisters back home are in so much pain and so much turmoil? Maybe what Daniel decided to risk was his resolve was not so much what the food was, but who the actual food was coming from. God was at work through all of what was taking place. The author of Daniel makes that very, very clear. God was involved in causing the exile to take place. God was involved in causing the official to show favor to Daniel. God was involved in causing Daniel to understand dreams and causing all four young men to understand the Babylonian way of life. Not Nebuchadnezzar. Not his reprogramming. Not his food to sustain them. But God was at work. God's presence and God's participation all throughout this process. God is still sovereign and in control of everything that was unfolding. And Daniel bore witness to that in maybe the only way he could. Learning to do the right thing the right way. Daniel's resolve, Daniel's wisdom is seen all throughout this first chapter. So if there's one application among many that we could take away from this intro story, I would like to shine the spotlight on this one simple thing. Look at what our God will do with what we consider to be common obedience. Look at what God will do with what we would consider to be something so common, so simple, so, well, duh, type of thing. But this common obedience led to a radical transformation in Daniel and the other three's life. Common obedience that led to a radical transformation in their lives. And also, look at what God did with Daniel's resolve. There is much to be said about the conviction of being faithful in the little things that leads to trust for the big things. But the telos, the direction, the preparation for Daniel and the three was grounded in faithfulness. Faithfulness in the little things. With each chapter that moves forward in this story, what we look back on and what we will see in chapter 1 is God preparing Daniel and the three for bigger, harder, more difficult things that were to come. This little test, if you will, that Daniel and the three went through, God was presently participating in preparing them for other things that were to come. Daniel and the three were grounded in God's faithfulness to them and their faithful love for God. They knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that they were not where they used to be. They were no longer at home. They had been told that they are not who they used to be. And they knew they were not where they wanted to be. They're not where they used to be. They're not who they used to be. And they are not where they wanted to be. And in the midst of all of that difficult circumstance, in the midst of all of that pain and trauma that they had gone through in the reprogramming process that they were and still going through, they still trusted in God's faithfulness. Despite the circumstances, God could be trusted. God is faithful. And that did not, that seemed to just provide fuel and fire for their love for God and their wisdom. They continued to rely on God's faithfulness and God's wisdom. They resolved to trust that despite their current circumstances, their God would not fail them nor forsake them, come what may. They chose faithfulness. So if there's one thing that I am kind of gleaning out of this first chapter, that I think it's something that we all can see and pay attention to and take home with us and wrestle with, if there is this big idea, it's this. Learning to live wisely. The process, the journey, the direction, the telos of learning to live wisely, to find the right way to do the right thing. Daniel had a determined conviction and with undefiled courage in preparation for what was to come. Each and every single day, Daniel, with undefiled courage and with this deep-seated faithful conviction, chose to trust in the faithfulness of God. And God was doing something with that. Something small, something we would consider common, something we would consider not a big deal. God was at work, presently participating with that. A witness to the one true God was unfolding right in front of everyone. Daniel's resolve was a witness to the wisdom and goodness of God. Arise, team, y'all can please join me up here, please. Whether our present trials, and all of us have them, all of us are going through something difficult. Every single one of us in this room walked in with some type of trial that we are going through. Whether our present trials are personal, that nobody knows about, that we've done a really good job keeping hidden from other people, whether they are personal, whether they are private, whether they're moral, whether they're ethical, whether they're public, Maybe your trial is out in the open and a lot of people know about it. Whether it's financial, whether it's relational. If we are not at work preparing for tomorrow's battles with holiness today, we will not be spiritually equipped enough to stand for what is right tomorrow. So the question to ask ourselves, and this requires work. There are three W's that I hope make sense. It requires wonder, it requires worship, and it requires work. We cannot just slide through this and think we're going to be all right at the end. It requires wonder in the beauty and the power, in the present filled participation of what God is up to. It requires daily worship, and it requires daily work. Today's trials are the training ground for tomorrow's battlefield. Stand with me, please. When Jesus has about 45 minutes left with his boys before the mock trial, before it all comes to a head, Jesus has this final prayer for his followers, for those that currently were following him and for those that were about to become followers of Jesus long into the years. Jesus has this powerful prayer in John chapter 17, beginning in verse 15. And it fits exactly with what was going on with Daniel. Jesus says, "My prayer is not, God, that you take them out of the world, that they escape from everything, that they escape the trials, that they escape the pain, that they escape the heartache, that they somehow are escaped this hedge of protection that sometimes we talk about." Jesus says, "My prayer is that you not give them a hedge of protection. My prayer is that you not take away the pain, take away the heartache, take them out of the world, but instead protect them from the evil one. They are not of this world, even as I am not of it. But Father, sanctify them, cleanse them, wash them by the truth. Your word is truth." As we close out our service, if there is anyone here this morning that would like to receive prayers from your brothers and sisters here, please come down and see me, and after this song, we will pray together. If you would like a more closed, a more private, a more intimate place to pray, one of our shepherds will be out by the prayer room, and Kelly is there this morning as our warrior, our prayer warrior lady. If you would like to pray with a female, ladies, Kelly's out there to receive you. Let's take a moment before we sing together and allow God to sink deep into our hearts anything from his word that we needed to hear, so that we're not in a rush to get out of here. Whatever restaurant you're going to, there's going to be a place. Wherever you're going to this morning, it is going to be there. So don't be in a rush to hurry up and let's just rush out of here. But whatever was said this morning from God's word, let's give it a moment and let it sink into our hearts. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, God, thank you for your word. Thank you for the story of Daniel. Thank you for this intro preparation story that we have in Daniel 1 that reveals your presence and your participation in circumstances that are for the most part beyond our understanding. But God, your goodness, your wisdom, your love, your direction for Daniel and Hananiah and Mishael and Azariah are clearly seen in this story, and we thank you for it. God, as Daniel had resolve to not give in nor give up, may we too choose to follow in his footsteps to be resolved and established in your truth. God, as Jesus prayed for all of his followers, may we be willing to allow you to sanctify ourselves with your truth. And God, don't take us out of this world, but protect us from the evil one. God, we love you. We trust you. Help us to live into and live out of your faithfulness. We offer this prayer in Jesus' name. Amen. However you need to respond, please do so as we worship together.